Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Frequency. Thank you all for tuning in, and welcome back to another episode. If you're a fan of thrillers, supernatural, or tales of terror, this is the show for you, The Graveyard Shift. If you enjoy this new format, please let me know through the comments on Spotify, my email, or my social media. All those links can be found in the description. And as always, if you enjoy this podcast, please consider following, reviewing, rating, and sharing. And leaving a 5-star rating and sharing the podcast with anyone you know is a great way to help out the podcast. Now with all that, please enjoy the show.
The Price of Fear. Brought to you by Vincent Price.
Hello there. You might be aware that as an actor, I've become associated almost entirely with what are known as horror movies. Personally, I don't think that description is quite adequate. I prefer to think of them purely and simply as fantasies, because they are, you know. They just couldn't happen, however vivid your imagination might be. In fact, there are far more macabre or even horrific events happening all around us every day of our lives, but we're just not aware of them. On my travels making movies in all parts of the world, men and women from various walks of life somehow always seem to manage to seek me out and to tell me their own strange experiences, and sometimes even I've been present when some of these frightening events have actually occurred. And now here I am with an opportunity to tell you a few of these stories, sometimes horrific, sometimes with a macabre sense of humor, but always, I promise you, containing the element of fear. And I've titled them, if you'll pardon the liberty, The Price of Fear. Now, my first story, which I've called Remains to Be Seen, I only heard about much later, but the details were recounted in such vivid terms by one of the principal characters involved, and I'll leave you to guess which one it was, that I almost felt that I was there. It concerns two men, neighbors, with like interests and a similar problem. Their interests were innocent enough, gardening and chess. But the problem they shared, well, was, shall we say, not quite as simple and not as easily solved.
Albert! Albert, where are you?
Emily Warren would hardly have omitted informing her husband, Albert, that they had recently acquired new neighbors. But at the same time, knowing Emily, she'd also probably contributed her own foregone opinion of them, either scathing, contemptuous, or both. In any event, it wasn't until some weeks after the newcomers' arrival that Albert actually became aware of them. It was a fine day in early spring, and Albert was digging in his beloved garden when the voice came to him across the low wicker fence that divided his domain from his neighbor's.
Good morning. You're going to have a nice show there.
Oh, good morning.
My name's Fred. Fred Treber. We're your new neighbors. At least not new, it's just that... Well, this is the first time we've got round to introducing ourselves properly.
A shortish, rotund figure, Fred Treber, offered his flabby pink hand.
My wife, Alice, that is, did try to pay a social call on one occasion. She got no answer.
Sorry about that. We must have been out.
But even as he said it, Albert knew the excuse must have sounded feeble. Emily had probably simply assessed her caller from behind the cover of the curtains and decided that social intercourse with their new neighbors was not to be encouraged. Anyway, Albert rubbed his hands on his dungarees and took Fred's hand in his own. Fred nodded towards the flower bed Albert had been tending.
They're amber Goliaths, aren't they?
Why, yes, they are.
The number of people among Albert's acquaintances who knew anything about dahlias at all could be counted on one hand, but a man who could actually recognize a specific strain before it had even come into bloom was obviously a force to be reckoned with. Fred took in Albert's immaculately tended flower beds, the precision cut of the lawn, and then looked towards his own wilderness.
Lot of work to be done here, of course. The last crowd. Still, gardening isn't everybody's cup of tea, is it?
No, no. They didn't seem to take much interest.
Do you play chess?
What?
Oh, you needn't even bother to answer that one. Show me a well-ordered garden, and 9 times out of 10, I'll show you a man who plays chess.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. But I do, as a matter of fact. If you like...
Yes?
Only that, if you'd care to have a game sometime.
I'd like that very much. Alice doesn't take any interest in being strangers to the neighbourhood.
Tell you what, then. If you're not doing anything this Thursday, you might care to come along to our local chess forum.
Oh, it sounds very grand. Way out of my league.
Nothing of the kind. Just a dozen or so of us. We meet up each week. The odd game, perhaps a drink or two afterwards. We usually kick off about 7.
Fred? Fred?
Albert was aware of the crash of a window and Alice's frizzled red head emerging. Even at this distance, henna was obviously the order of the day.
How many more times do I have to call you?
No peace for the wicked, eh?
Your lunch has been on the table for at least 5 minutes. So don't blame me if it's cold again. Well, what are you doing down there anyway?
Just a chat, Alice, my love.
Should have thought you'd got something better to do.
Wives. You know what they are.
Wives? Oh, yes, I know what they are, all right.
Till Thursday, then. About 6.
Albert! For heaven's sake, Albert!
6 will be fine.
6 let it be, then.
And 6 on the dot it was. Except that Albert wasn't quite ready for him. That is to say, he thought he was ready until Emily decided to point out...
The collar of that shirt's beginning to fray. And Albert, those shoes, they could do with a rub over. And who's ever heard of anyone wearing a polka dot tie with a striped shirt, anyway?
Oh, dear. Shan't keep you long, Fred.
No hurry. I'm sure Emily will do a good job of entertaining me. Won't you, Emily? Don't mind me calling you Emily, do you?
Not more than a couple of minutes.
Don't forget to wash behind your ears, old fellow.
A cup of coffee, Mr. Treber?
Never touch the stuff. Caffeine, you know. Murder on the stomach. Not to mention the nerves. Da-da-dum-dee-dee.
Oh, you're admiring my painting?
Painting?
It's a very good copy, don't you think?
Not at all bad, as repros go.
Repro?
Oh, yes, there is a difference.
Oh?
A copy is made by an artist, a repro by machine. The one is alive by the very nature of it having been copied, the other dead by the very nature of it having been...
Reproed?
You've got it. Bit busy, though, isn't it?
Oh?
Bruegel always was, of course. Busy minds make busy scenes, don't you agree?
Bruegel?
Bruegel, Jan, 1569 to 1642.
You know a lot about art.
Nothing at all. Only the facts. Alice, my wife, that is, invested in this encyclopedia thing, you see. Never opened it herself, but the bindings are impressive, I'll grant you. Every home should have one. You know the kind of thing.
Oh, yes, we have a simply splendid
set. Oh, yes, first thing I noticed as I came in. But it's all facts, isn't it? Only facts. Nothing about what the man thought or felt or suffered. Only what he did.
All set, then?
Who is for chess, then?
Fred Treber's chess wasn't exactly up to Grand Master standards. In fact, he freely admitted...
Self-taught. Never read a book on the subject in my life. As for all this classic opening gambit stuff you go on about, Albert, well, I'll never get that into my head, and that's for sure.
But for all his good-humoured modesty, he had a natural, almost reckless flair for the game, so that as loser pays, Albert usually found himself buying the drinks. The conversation on these occasions was inevitably of the small-talk variety. It wasn't until a month after their first evening together that Fred suddenly took it into his head to change all that, and the audacity of it left Albert gasping.
She really did give you a roasting last night, didn't she? I mean, even more than usual, I mean. Really excelled herself.
I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about.
Of course you do. Your sweet Emily is what I'm talking about. What was it all about, anyway? Just things in general? Or did you actually commit the cardinal sin of forgetting to put the cat out?
I really don't know
what... Oh, but you do, our Albert. You seem to forget that apart from putting our comfortable suburban villas within spitting distance of each other, the architect must have had something going for paper-thin walls. Pour milk on your cereal or turn to the sports page, and it's like you were doing it at our breakfast table instead of your own.
I'm sorry about that.
Oh, don't be. Every time your sweet Emily gives you a bawling out, I'm grateful.
I wish you'd stop calling her that.
Well, not so sweet Emily, then.
Why should you be grateful?
Why? Because my not-so-sweet Alice is so busy bending her ear trying to tune into your latest misdemeanor, it gives me a temporary respite from her own scolding tongue. How did you come to marry her in the first place, anyway?
Who? Emily?
Don't tell me you've got another shrew tucked away somewhere. You don't have to tell me.
It just happened.
I know the feeling.
We both worked for the same firm, Marshall Paper Products. I was senior accountant, and Emily...
A plodding typist?
How did you know?
It's the classic situation, isn't it? Switch firms and you've got Alice and me to a T.
Plain, quiet, subdued. Not bright, mind. Her conversation seldom went beyond the weather.
I bet she only ever read the newspapers on alternate days.
You're probably right. But then... Well, I was getting on a bit. Always did feel there was something to be said for a marriage being an arrangement, not a romance.
And so you marry them and are surprised to find your plain, quiet, subdued woman can turn into a shrew overnight. Have another drink.
I don't think we ought to. The wives will be expecting us.
Which is exactly why we're going to. This time it's on me. Two of the same, please.
While they waited for their drinks, no word was spoken. And yet, out of their silence, there seemed to grow a new understanding. An understanding at once sympathetic and, to a degree, conspiratorial. They were like two men who had come to terms with the fact that they faced a common enemy. It was a recognition that Albert would have preferred not to acknowledge, so that when the drinks eventually arrived, he did his best to refute it.
Thanks.
About what you were saying, Fred?
About what we were saying, Albert.
We, then.
Well, what?
Well, things could have turned out a damn sight worse for the pair of us, you know.
Well, the left on the shelf bit, you mean? We should be so lucky.
All right. So we both thought we were marrying one kind of person and ended up...
marrying another and wishing to God we hadn't.
Well, we're not exactly Gregory Peck, are we?
No.
I mean, it's a damn sight better than being left out in the cold altogether. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, all things considered, wouldn't you?
Fred did not reply. His eyes remained averted. But Albert was disconcertingly aware of the very faintest of smiles at the corner of his lips.
Damn it all, man, wouldn't you? I mean, any port in a storm, as the saying goes.
Oh, all very well for mariners caught up in a storm and making a last-ditch stand, I grant you.
But
we don't happen to be in their exact predicament, do we, Albert? Not absolutely last-ditch, Albert. For us, there are other possibilities. Other alternatives.
And Fred looked up. This time, their eyes held. And Albert felt a sinking feeling at the pit of his stomach. Checkmate, game, and match, he thought. And yet the real game was only about to begin. It happened in the early hours of the morning, but Alice Treber, a natural insomniac anyway, and always on permanent guard duty as far as the Warrens were concerned, was out of bed and staring into the moonlit garden almost before the last tinkle of glass had died away.
Fred! Fred! Fred, will you wake up when I'm talking to you?
As if there were any choice.
That crash... it came from the Warrens, all right. One of their fancy French windows with the sound of it.
Burglar, me?
Use your head. Burglar would be breaking in, wouldn't he?
It is customary, I believe.
Well, whoever this is... it's Albert. It's him, I tell you. Fred Treble, will you get out of that bed?
All right. But for heaven's sake, it must be 2 o'clock in the morning.
Well?
It looks like Albert, all right.
Well, of course it's Albert.
So?
So why would he be breaking out of his own house? Hey, Fred, I do... Yes, he is. He's struggling with something. Hey, that's why he broke that pane of glass, you see. Struggling to get something through. Can you make it out?
Some kind of box, by the look of it.
A chest. A chest, more like. A large tin chest. Now, whatever would he be... Well, he's dragging it across the terrace now. Oh, do get behind that curtain when I tell you.
Oh.
Do you want him to think we're spying on him?
Well, we are, aren't we?
Oh. Well, now, he's dragging it down the terrace steps. Whatever is it?
One hell of a weight by the look of it.
Well, he's left it there. Right in the middle of the lawn. He's going into the tool shed. Hey, do you see that? See the way he looked round before he opened the door? Very suspicious. Hey, he's coming out. He's carrying something.
Back to that chest thing by the looks of it.
I do believe it. Yes, it's a shovel. A large, heavy garden shovel. He's digging, Fred. He's digging.
But for Fred and Alice Treber, the show was over. As silently and dramatically as a curtain falling on a mystery play, a cloud passed across the moon, and the drama being enacted below them in the Warrens' garden was lost to view. They both stood there for a long time, scarcely breathing, but when the cloud had passed and the garden was once again bathed in the moon's ghostly light... There was nothing to be seen. Whatever had happened, had happened. Was apparently over and done with. But not for Alice Treiber. Let sleeping dogs lie had never been her favorite motto, so that after 3 days without sight or sound of Emily Warren, Alice decided to take matters into her own hands.
I don't care what you think or what you don't think, Fred Treiber. 3 whole days, and not a sign of her. As respectable, God-fearing citizens, we've no choice, have we?
But Alice...
No choice at all.
Come on, Johnson, put your back into it. That's better. Over there, Doss.
But Mr. Warren, sir, the lady was only doing her duty.
Duty? My backside.
As she thought fit.
Alice Treiber's nothing but a nosy, meddling old busybody.
As any law-abiding, conscientious citizen would.
And as a result of which, you move in here with your Gestapo and start tearing the place apart. Look at my garden. Took years to lay that lawn. My God, they're starting on my dahlia beds now.
Your own doing, I'm afraid, sir. If you'd chosen to cooperate in the first place...
Cooperate? I like that. By confessing to an act I didn't even commit, you mean. Let's get it straight, shall we, Inspector? It's not that I'm not all for making your unpleasant duty a little less unpleasant for you. For both of us. But one's got to draw the line somewhere.
Your wife is missing, sir. On your own admission, not a sight or sound of her for 3 days. Not since the night the Treibers saw...
Thought they saw.
What they saw.
Then, for God's sake, list her as missing. And get these vandals out of my house and off my property.
Oh, you do concede the fact, then.
That she's missing? Well, if by missing you mean that she's gone away, that I am at present uncertain of her whereabouts, I concede the fact.
Excuse me, sir.
What is it, Constable?
We finished upstairs, sir.
Well, make a start down here, then.
Why not take a peek in the cocktail cabinet?
The cellar, Constable.
It's locked, sir.
The key, sir. Mr. Warren, the key.
On a nail, the right-hand side of the door.
Right, when you've got things going down there, Constable, see if they've come up with anything in the garden.
Right, sir. All right, you lot. Get on with it.
Not a sledgehammer, for God's sake.
Now, sir, having conceded the fact that your wife is missing...
That she's gone away.
How do you account for her absence?
I don't. I can't. She simply packed a suitcase during the night and left me.
You know, of course, she was very heavily insured.
Fairly heavily insured. We both were, but I'm still standing here, aren't I?
And that you are the sole beneficiary.
It's a fairly common arrangement between husband and wife, I believe.
Fairly common. And this bloodstain on the carpet, sir, near the window?
I've already explained. It's my own. I gashed my hand when I was replacing the broken pane.
We can check that, you know.
I've no doubt when you finish tearing the house apart and found nothing, you'll eventually get round to it.
It's not a very expert job, sir, is it?
It needed fixing in a hurry.
Oh?
I happen to be allergic to drafts.
Drafts, sir? What, in high summer?
And very susceptible at that.
Sir?
Yes, well, Constable?
Reporting from the garden, sir, they found the trunk. Right in the centre of the lawn, more or less just where the Treibers first indicated. I took the liberty of examining its contents, sir.
And? Well, ma'am?
A dead cat, sir.
What?
A dead cat. So, I'm guilty of burying a dead cat. What's the penalty, Inspector? The hangman's noose? A life sentence with no options?
You were very evasive, Mr. Warren. First you denied that you'd buried anything.
Because I didn't think it was any of your damn business.
The animal's head had been smashed in, sir.
Mr. Warren?
I'm not in the habit of examining dead cats. All right, if you must know, I happen to be allergic to cats as well.
The cat was your wife's?
Is that significant?
It might be. It's my theory, sir, that after you killed your wife, you then killed the cat.
Fascinating. And why should I do that?
Perhaps because it would always remind you of your wife.
Or perhaps because the creature had witnessed the disposing of the body and might lead us to...
Constable.
Sir?
You'll be up for promotion if you're not careful, Constable.
Anything else to report?
Not a thing, sir. Covered everything, the house, top to bottom, garden, end to end.
I see. In that case, we'd better call it a day. Well, we'll naturally be along to make good any damage, Mr. Warren.
Thoughtful of you.
But that still doesn't mean I'm convinced.
That you'll be hearing from my solicitor? You should be.
Sorry, Inspector. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Yes, Mr. Treiber. Well, what is it now?
a sudden thought. Mr. Warren also has a little place at Lakeside Park.
Oh, Fred.
Pretty spot, surrounded by scrub and woodland. And just recently, Mr. Warren mentioned he was laying alone. I thought it might...
Of some significance.
Oh, now, look. Not my lord.
It might indeed, Mr. Treber. Constable, get the men together.
Right, sir.
Mr. Warren, I have the distinct feeling you'll be hearing from us again. Good day, sir.
Good day.
Did I say something wrong, Albert?
Fred Treber, I'll never play chess with you again.
That very night, if Alice Treber hadn't been snoring her head off due to a somewhat potent sleeping draught added to her nightly cup of drinking chocolate, she might have seen the two men crossing her lawn and that of her neighbors. Between them, they carried a somewhat bulky load wrapped in a tarpaulin. The men in question were her own husband, Fred, absent by default, and the highly suspect Albert Warren. The bundle between them, the earthly remains of the much-missed Emily. Arriving at his own house, Albert let them in by the side door, and from there through the kitchen and down the steps that led to his cellar.
Where's the ruddy ton?
Oh, the police have left your cellar looking like a battlefield.
Good idea. Hiding her over at your place, Fred. Smart thinking. But you're sure Alice didn't suspect anything?
Not a chance. Never goes down into the cellar on account of the spiders, you see.
Let's have her over here, then. That's it. Nice of the police to leave this hole. Roll her in, then.
Not very deep.
Deep enough.
You're sure they won't find her?
Not a chance. Pass us the spade. Aye, foot and a half should do it. The law will be back in the morning to do the job properly. Would you believe it? The old cow's mouth is still open.
Would you like me to close it?
No need. Let's just fill it for her, shall we?
It's funny to think a year from now, my Alice will be going the same way. We do have to wait a full year, I suppose.
It's what we agreed.
What we agreed.
That should do it. Checkmate, game and match, eh?
Albert.
Fred?
One thing.
Out with it, then.
You didn't really mean what you said about never playing chess with me again, did you?
At the time. Took a lot of work, that lawn, out at Lakeside, you know.
But now?
Well, we're partners, aren't we?
I'll set up the board, shall I, Albert?
Why not?
Albert followed Fred up the cellar steps. If he had a thought at all, it was only to remember the old adage to the effect that the safest place to hide anything is where no one will ever look. And the second safest place? Where they've looked already. When Albert reached the top of the steps, he switched off the light. He never looked back.
That was Vincent Price, bringing you The Price of Fear. Also starring in this story, remains to be seen, were Mervyn Johns, Michael Gwynn, Clive Swift, and Avril Angers, with Diana Bishop and Robin Brown. Remains to be Seen was first recounted by Jack Ritchie, dramatized by William Ingram, and produced by John Dias. Thank you.
A boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say ahoy or land ho and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. Geico's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say shiver me timbers and not feel weird about that either. Get more with Geico.
Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre, presented by Camel Cigarettes.
Yes?
You're Mr. Amos G. Hall, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Who are you?
I'm Barastro, the hypnotist and magician. They call me the Marvelous Barastro.
What do you want? How did you get in my office?
I said I was a magician. I do such things.
Well, why have you come to see me?
Why? Because you're a great lawyer, and I'll have need of your services soon.
Indeed?
Yes, indeed. Because tonight I shall commit a murder.
Each week at this hour, Peter Lorre brings us the excitement of the great stories of the strange and unusual, of dark and compelling masterpieces culled from the four corners of world literature. Tonight, The Marvelous Barastro by Ben Hecht. Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre, brought to you by Camel Cigarettes. Experience is the best teacher. Try a Camel. Let your own experience tell you why more people are smoking Camels than ever before. And the best place for that experience is right in your own T-zone. That's T for taste and T for throat. Find out what your taste has to say about the rich, full flavor of Camel's superb blend of choice tobaccos. Find out how your throat reacts to Camel's cool, cool mildness. You, like millions of delighted smokers, may well find yourself saying, Camel suit my T-zone to a T. The famous criminal lawyer Amos G. Hall sits staring into the hypnotic eyes of the Marvelous Barastro, who has just announced that tonight he will commit murder.
Yes, Mr. Hall, For a long time, I have dreamed only one dream, to kill this man.
Why? Who is he?
Rico Sansoni. Have you heard of him?
No, can't say that I have.
Well, he's a great magician, a great hypnotist, yes. He's clever, he's too clever. I've hunted him from country to country, from city to city, all over the world. Sometimes I've almost caught him. In London, I only missed him by only 2 hours, but tonight I shall meet him face to face.
You know where he is then? Right now?
Yes. Rico Sansoni is here, in this city, now. Tonight he opens in his first stage performance, and I'll be there, waiting for him.
Well, apart from the legalistic aspects of the case... Why do you want to murder this man?
Why? Listen closely, Mr. Hall, and perhaps you'll know a part of my hate for this fiend. Oh, it began some time ago. I was traveling with a small carnival through Eastern Europe. I cast horoscopes, I read the future, I revealed the past, and conversed with the spirits. That is how I earned a meager living. Well, one night our carnival came to a village, oh, somewhere in Mellow Russia. Peasants and the villagers gathered around our tents and wagons, and through a hole in a black box where I stood, I watched the crowd while a barker made his speech.
Sarastro, the magician who speaks with the dead, tells the future, reads the secrets of life. Sarastro, who reveals
and then,
the past.
Then I saw her. She had a young and gentle face. She was beautiful. Oh, so beautiful, I couldn't take my eyes away. And then to my indescribable joy, a peasant led her in, and I saw at once the girl was blind.
This is my granddaughter, Anna. She would like you to tell her fortune.
Can you tell my future?
Yes, Anna, I can.
Will it be a happy one, my future?
Well, show me your hand, and I'll tell you.
Here.
I took her hand. And suddenly, I felt a chill. I could hear the voices which foretell the future.
Fly, fly, run, run.
Yes, I could hear them, and fear, a great fear gripped me, but the girl's beautiful, sightless eyes, they were so full of hope and faith, I just couldn't tell her the truth. Spirits promise you great happiness, Anna.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, your hands will touch beautiful things, and love and great happiness await you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Oh, thank you, thank you.
That was the beginning. Her face never left me that night, and I couldn't sleep. The next morning I looked for her, and I found her. We walked through the hills, and she spoke of the trees she could not see.
I call that tree lullaby, because it sings when it sways in the wind.
Yes.
And this other I call prayer. They told me its branches open toward heaven.
I was with her that whole day, and the next, and the next, and we walked often in the hills and the forest, and she knew every turn in a path. We were in love, and when it came time for the carnival to move on, I asked Anna to come with me as my wife.
You make me very happy, Gregor. I could live only with you. I love you with all my heart.
And I love you with all my heart, Anna. And I'll care for you, and I'll protect you.
And you'll teach me, Gregor. You'll teach me to see.
To see?
One doesn't need eyes to see as you do.
No, one does not.
Oh, please, Gregor, teach me to see beyond the horizon. Please teach me to see as you see.
Yes, Anna. My sweet little Anna. And the day we were married, we rode together in a gilded wagon, and the vows were taken under a clear sky. But immediately after, the sky suddenly changed. I realized what I had done. It was I. It was I who was carrying out the terrible message of the stars. For it was I that fate had selected to destroy her. From that moment on, I was haunted. One evening, it was less than a month later, I stood in a black box outside my tent, and I knew it had come. That graceful, smiling man who stood before the tent, he was studying Anna. Not once did he take his eyes from her. Hey, you! You, why do you stare at her?
Let go of my arm.
I don't want you to stare at her.
Who are you?
That makes no difference. She's my wife.
Oh, I most humbly beg your pardon, sir. Mm. You see, I was admiring your wife.
Yes?
Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Rico Sansone, the hypnotist and magician. Mm. I'm going on a world tour soon, and I'd hoped she could join me as my assistant. I feel she has remarkable psychic powers.
She is blind.
I apologize doubly for my seeming forwardness.
Oh, I knew he sensed the ominous shadows around her as I did, but then he smiled, and I was disarmed, and soon I became interested in his talk. He talked like a friend. He flattered me about my knowledge of the secrets of our profession.
I notice you performed a disappearing cage trick, Verastro.
Yes, I do.
A most difficult one that you performed magnificently.
Thank you. Well, come, Sansone, I'd like you to meet my wife. She's here in the wagon.
Delighted, my dear Verastro. It's a privilege I'll not forget, let me assure you.
Oh, Gregor.
Hello, Anna.
Gregor, who is that with you?
Oh, it's a gentleman I want you to meet. Anna, this is Rico Sansone.
A great pleasure and a great sorrow. You see, I've been watching you tonight in the hope I could persuade you to become my assistant. But now I learn you're this charming gentleman's wife. How fortunate is the marvelous Barastro.
Marvelous Barastro? Anna, did you hear what he called me? Anna, what's the matter? Have you no word of greeting for our guest?
No.
What's the matter, Anna?
I have nothing to say.
I'm sorry. You see, my wife and I, we seldom have visitors.
I understand perfectly. But I hope that she will like me when she gets to know me better.
And so, Rico Sansone entered our lives. In the days which followed, he attached himself ever more closely to us, as a lonely man would who seeks the friendship of those he likes. But Anna, she would never trust him. Sometimes after he would leave at night, she'd whisper,
I don't like him, Gregor. I don't like...
Why?
I feel something strange from him.
And I like a fool, I would always defend him. I'd remind her of his gay talk and how he made us laugh and how interested he was in me and my methods of magic. Oh, I was flattered that even Rico wanted to learn from me. One night, Anna and I had just finished our dinner. She turned to me. She had a troubled expression on her beautiful face.
Gregor, there's something I must tell you.
What, my sweet? Are you getting tired of this kind of life, huh?
Oh, no, Gregor. It's this afternoon.
What about this afternoon? What about it, Anna?
Rico.
What about Rico?
This afternoon, Rico came here and talked to me as he always does.
Yes.
I suspected nothing. But then he took my hand in his and asked me if I loved you.
He asked you what?
If I loved you even more than happiness or life.
What did you say?
I was so frightened. I just asked him to leave. I don't like him, Gregor. I'm afraid.
Again, I reassured Anna. After all, what had happened? Nothing. Well, our friendship continued. Weeks passed. The carnival had moved to Hamburg, and we had taken an apartment in the city. We spent the days together, and he was more and more interested in my every word and thought and mood, and as always, I was flattered by him.
You have a funny way of saying beautiful, my friend.
Hmm?
How is it again?
Beautiful.
Yes, that's it. Beautiful.
Look, Rico, you were telling me about that.
Beautiful. Oh, I like you, Gregor. I like you very much.
Yes, Yes, amazing, isn't it? How one can be taken in by flattery. Yet so clever was he, I never realized the terrible truth of his friendship with me. I was in my tent one afternoon when a warning swept over me. It was all of a sudden, but I couldn't mistake it. I left the tent and I hurried to the apartment. And carefully, I opened the door. Yes, there was Rico, standing with his arms around my wife, her face raised to his lips. She kissed him. And then I heard him talk. It was my voice he was using. My voice, completely mine. Of his voice, a nameless fury seized me. Now I knew why he'd been so interested in me, why he'd spent so many hours with me. He'd learned to perfection how to use my voice. Now his words seemed to come from my own throat. I sprang forward, shouting, Rico, Anna, don't touch him! Don't get him!
In a few moments, Mr. Peter Lorre will bring us the climax of tonight's Mystery in the Air, when Camels present Act Two of The Marvelous Barastro.
You know, it's getting to be like a chorus as one champion after another joins in with the same words, those true, true words. Experience is the best teacher. Yes, Cecil Smith states that it's experience that counts in polo. Mildred O'Donnell says the same thing about diving. And Don Whitfield about racing outboard motorboats. And they all say that when it comes to choosing a cigarette, experience is the best teacher, too. Like all of us, they had the experience of smoking anything they could get during the wartime cigarette shortage. They compared the differences in cigarette quality. Really became experts, you could say. That's when experience really taught them all about the rich, full flavor and the cool mildness of Camel's great blend of choice, properly aged tobaccos. And it taught so many other people, too, that, well,
more people are smoking Camels than ever before.
Experience is the best teacher. Try a Camel yourself.
Amos G. Hall, the attorney, sits at his desk fascinated by the magician Barastro as he tells his strange story. Now the attorney leans forward.
That is incredible.
Yes.
You mean this Sansoni had studied your speech and mannerisms so perfectly that he was able to deceive your wife?
Yes, incredible as it may seem.
Well, go on.
Fine. I hardly remember rushing across the room. All I could think of was to kill this man, to kill him. Anna screamed, and he and I, we struggled across the room over chairs and table against the walls and the window. I saw him through my rage. Every feature had changed. He was Barastro. There were two of us. Yes, two. Barastro screaming, together fighting. Then he had me by the throat. His strength was terrifying. The breath began to leave my body as this horrible fiend changed and he became Rico Sansoni again.
Barastro, have mercy, man. Gregor, you're killing me. I am dying.
Yes, he was pretending it was I who was killing him. He would kill me and live with anger as Barastro. His cruel eyes burned into mine, and he leaned close to my ear and whispered,
"You fool, I'll kill you for her."
It was then that I cried with all my might, "Anna! Anna!" And then suddenly
A great darkness flooded over me. I don't know how much time had gone by when I opened my eyes. I looked around the room. It was gone. Then I saw Anna. She was crouched against the wall. I tried to whisper. Anna. Anna. I began to drag myself across the floor to her. When I got to her side, I tried to reach for her hand. She pulled it away and screamed. And then I realized her terror. Who was in the room with her? Was it Rico? Was it her husband? How could she know? I pleaded with her. I assured her again and again that Rico had gone, but she remained against the wall, her hand held in her teeth and staring into the terrible dark around her. Frantically, I searched my mind for words to tell her it was really I. Look, Anna, listen. Remember, Anna? Remember our walk through the hills? First time? Huh? See, remember, Anna, your trees? Remember them? The one you called lullaby? And the one whose branches pointed to the sky? You called it prayer. See? See, Anna? It is I. Listen carefully. Look, remember I read your future? It's the first time we met. I said, the spirits promise you happiness and your hands will touch beautiful things. Love and great happiness await you. And you said, oh, thank you, sir, thank you.
Gregor, help me.
Yes.
Gregor, please help me. Don't help me.
Yes, Anna. Yes. Rico had disappeared, but from that day on, I had only one thought, to guard against the day I knew must come. She traveled all over Europe, and she learned to smile and be happy again, and at times I felt her fears had left her.
Vienna's such a lovely city, Gregor. I knew it would be like this in the spring. Gregor, these mountains, they're like the ones near my village. Mm-hmm. Why, I can almost see them. Oh, it's wonderful to be home, Gregor.
Yes, ma'am.
To walk in our hills and over the old paths again.
Well, at last I felt it was safe to get a job in a cabaret. I had to get a job. Our savings were almost gone, and I had only worked there 2 weeks when I felt that same terrible warning sweep over me again. Choked and dizzy, I ran to our cottage. Yes, Rico was back. I stood there, motionless, silent, listening. Anna, my beautiful Anna.
Oh, my Gregor.
I heard her laugh like a child. All I knew, I had to kill this devil who would take my wife, my identity, my happiness. I am sure if I had been able to think, I would have realized I shouldn't rush into the room because it would kill her. I'm quite sure Rico knew it, but all I could think was I had to kill him. And then, Mr. Hall, I had a terrifying idea. What if Rico killed me? He'd go on living with her as Barastro, and she'd never know. See, Mr. Hall? Well, I opened the door and walked in. Anna, don't touch him. It's Rico.
sir, is my memory of Anna. She tore at her eyes with her hands, as if to tear away the darkness. As I rushed to her, she fell. She didn't speak again, and the next morning she died. Huh? Sansoni. I think you understand now, Mr. Hall, why I'll kill Rico Sansoni tonight. Now you know why I may need your services to defend me. No, not my life, but my name and my honor. Good night, Mr. Hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've practiced criminal law for 25 years, and I've heard many strange tales. But that night, I couldn't sleep. The next morning, there was an item in the paper. A train had hit a car in which two magicians were riding. One was killed, his body so badly cut up as to be unidentifiable. The other was in the hospital. I hurried over there, made inquiries, and went to the room. I quickly told the nurse my business, and she led me to the bed. Two burning eyes, all that was left of a face, stared out through a mass of bandages as the nurse leaned over close to him.
Your attorney, Mr. Hall, is here.
Yes.
Well, I guess you'll not have any need of my services after all. The police haven't placed a charge against you, have they?
Police? Why should they? It was an accident. Just a bad accident.
Well, it must have been perfectly done. You know, the only thing I don't understand, how could you have killed him in the accident and not be killed yourself?
Well, I'm the marvelous Barrasto, am I not? Or don't you believe me?
Each week, the makers of Camel cigarettes send free Camels to servicemen's hospitals from coast to coast. This week, the Camels go to Veterans Home, Yountville, California, Lockbourne Army Air Base Hospital, Columbus, Ohio, U.S. Naval Hospital, Great Lakes, Illinois, U.S. Marine Hospital, Fort Stanton, New York, and Veterans Hospital, Staten Island, New York.
The makers of Camels take great pride in the fact that among the millions of smokers who enjoy Camels, there are many doctors. 113,597 doctors in every state of the Union were queried by three leading independent research organizations. What cigarette do you smoke, doctor? That was the question. The brand named most was Camel.
According to a nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Next week, Mystery in the Air, starring Mr. Peter Lorre, brings you The Lodger, by Mrs. Belloc Lowndes, with a special musical score composed and conducted by Paul Barron.
How about it, mister? Have you tried mild Prince Albert in your pipe? More pipes smoke Prince Albert than any other tobacco. See if you don't like that extra rich, full flavor, too. Like Prince Albert more than any other tobacco you've ever smoked. Prince Albert is specially made for smoking pleasure, specially treated to ensure against tongue bite. Crimp cut to burn slow, smoke cool. Fill your pipe with mild PA. Be sure to listen in on Prince Albert's Grand Ole Opry Saturday night. You'll hear Red Foley and his Cumberland Valley Boys, Minnie Pearl, Rod Brasfield, and all of the Opry gang. And as Red's special guest, you'll hear Texas Jim Robertson. Remember, Prince Albert's Grand Ole Opry, Saturday night, over NBC.
Listen again next week at this same time when the makers of Camel cigarettes present Mr. Peter Lorre in Mystery in the Air. The artists supporting Mr. Lorre were Henry Morgan, John Brown, Barbara Eiler, Howard Culver, Jane Morgan, and Russell Thorson. This is Michael Roy in Hollywood wishing you all a pleasant good night for Camel.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
If you're enjoying this episode, please don't forget to share the podcast and to leave a 5-star rating.
I can't find High Pitch or Slade listed among these names, Mandrake.
No, I noticed that, Nada. However, they're only hirelings, small cogs in a vast machine.
How about the man who phoned the garage and asked for High Pitch?
There was authority back of that voice. I'd know it if I ever heard it again.
Whoever he was, he must know you were pretending to be High Pitch.
Oh, of course. He hung up instantly when I couldn't give the answering password. But we have both passwords now. The great plan and the day is near.
That makes me shiver, Mandrake. The great plan. The plan of destruction nationwide.
And the day is near, meaning their plans are almost perfected, and they're getting ready to strike.
Oh, there must be some way we can prevent this, Mandrake.
Oh, the map in this red book is what interests me most, Nada.
These names must mean something.
Yes. I believe they're the names of the men in charge of production at the munitions plant.
Not traitors, Mandrake?
Oh, no, far from it. These are the men who keep the defense wheels turning. They may be marked for death first.
But why are these three names marked with the Red Cross?
Let's see. I think I can find the answer to that one on this map, too. See here where I have my finger?
Yes.
There's a Red Cross. Here's another one here and one here. Now, those three crosses mark the spots where munitions plants once stood.
You mean they've been blown up?
They blew up. The cause has never been fixed. The plant managers were killed.
That's horrible.
Now, these other circles all over the map are in blue. Points marked for destruction later on. Now, I see this one section marked off with a faint purple square.
Yes, I see it.
Now, that's a desolate section of the mountains. The point toward which I think High Pitch is driving this van now.
You really think there's a secret airplane base there?
Well, you heard that report over the radio, Nada. Giant bombers start across the Atlantic. They disappear, never to be heard from again. Now, they could turn south along the coast, fly inland, and reach a mountain hideout.
I know what you're saying, Mr. Mandrake, but it couldn't be.
What?
It couldn't be, I tell you.
My Tommy.
I couldn't help hearing what you were saying.
Tommy, we weren't saying anything we didn't want you to hear.
My dad was a pilot. He was flying one of those bombers across the Atlantic.
I know. You told me, Tommy.
My dad was killed doing his duty. I know he was.
Tommy, please.
Gosh, if you knew my dad, Mr. Mandrake, you'd know he couldn't do anything like that. He couldn't.
Well, Tommy, Mandrake didn't mean that your daddy was a traitor.
Yes, he did. He said
Tommy, so. I'm sure your father was as brave and honorable as his son.
Master, loafer thief. What matter, Tommy? Oh, I mean, Mr. Turk.
Nothing, Lothar. I'm all right. I get them what you call a sissy baby. I think I'll go lie down at the back of the truck.
What matter, Mr. Turk? Who hurt him feelings?
I did, Lothar. Quite unintentionally. Tommy's father was a pilot on one of those missing bombers, and, well, he thought I was accusing his father of being a traitor.
Hendrick, you don't think...
No. No, I'm sure Tommy's father was killed. Ah, poor boy. Probably nourishes a hope that his father is still alive.
Mandrake, if we're driving straight into the enemy's camp, we'll all be discovered as soon as High Pitch opens the van door.
Lothar discovers something.
What, Lothar?
Lothar wonder why air stays so good after a long time in closed van.
By George, you're right, Lothar. I never thought of it, but the air is clear in here.
Come up front, Master. Lothar, show you something.
Sit here in the coupe while I go with Lothar, Nada.
All right, Mandrake.
Master.
Hmm?
Lothar, I've been listening with ear to hole. Lothar hears saying. You listen. You hear. Put ear to small hole, Master.
She'll be coming round the mountain when she comes. She'll be coming round the mountain. She'll be coming round the mountain.
You hear, Master?
Yes. He still doesn't suspect there's anybody in this van but Nada. We've stopped. And the motor stalled.
Try and listen again, Master.
Hey, what's the idea of jumping out of the bushes that way?
Scared you, didn't I? I like to scare people.
Yeah? You sound wacky.
Yeah, that's what everybody says. That's what they call me, wacky. Only name I've got, but I don't mind.
Does your keeper know you're loose, wacky?
Oh, yes. They let me go any place I like to go as long as I don't try to pass the guards. They shoot you if you try to pass the guards.
But look, take your foot off my running board.
You won't give me a lift? Not give poor Wacky a lift?
See the sign? No riders.
But everybody going in lets me ride. It's only going out they won't let me ride. But maybe you're going the wrong direction.
I'm going in the right direction. Take your foot off the running board.
They won't let you through the tunnel in the mountain without the password.
What password?
Anybody using this road would know the password. They shoot you if you haven't got it.
Hey, I don't think you're as wacky as you sound.
I know the password.
Yeah? Well, I'll try one out on you. The great plan.
The great plan. That's it.
Yeah? Well, what's the answer to it? Make it snappy before I let you have it.
None. Don't you, wacky. He never hurt nobody.
Come on. The password. Make it snappy.
The day is near.
Well, why didn't you say so in the first place? Hop up here.
You're very kind to wacky.
Yeah, you're a smooth one. Neat way of checking up on this road. The big boss don't overlook a bet. High pitch is what they call me, wacky. And I got a passenger back there in the van. Good-looking filly, too. Bringing her up here for the rest cure. You know what I mean. She'll be coming round the mountain when she comes. She'll be coming round the mountain.
Oh, okay. Slip back. No matter what we found out. I don't think we're far from that tunnel in the mountain. It looks as though we're going to find out what's on the other end of it.
Box number 2, inner tunnel entrance, holding van with high pitch and wacky. Your orders, Dr. Carvas.
Keep that van on the cover. Assign it to one of the rock galleries.
Yes, sir.
Send high pitch to me at once. Coming.
Hello, boss. Never expected to find you up here. I brought you a surprise. Got it in my van. What's the matter, boss? What you doing with that gun in your hand?
I'm trying to make up my mind, High Pitch. Whether to shoot you or chain you in one of the rock galleries.
But, boss...
Dr. Carvas, you swine. You disobeyed my orders by driving your van into the secret base.
But I got a hot car in the van. And the Dame Slade kidnapped. I swear I wasn't followed.
Yet someone knew you had Slade's black coupe and a Granada in your van.
But they couldn't, boss.
Listen, you fool. I called the garage last night.
Yeah?
But a strange voice answered. When I asked for you, I was told to wait. Then another voice.
Look, boss, there was nobody there, so help
me. The second voice said he was you. But when he failed to give the password, I hung up.
Say, there was somebody there then.
Quite intelligent of you to realize that.
Now, look. Somebody called me at the lunchroom. They sounded okay. They tried to pump me.
What did you say?
Nothing, so help me.
It was Mandrake.
Mandrake?
Of course. He answered the phone when I called. Then he phoned you to find out where you were going with the van. You probably led Mandrake straight to this hidden base.
Listen. Don't raise that gun. I swear I wasn't followed.
Perhaps we had better search the van first.
Search the van first.
Sure. Make that Nada talk.
Come in.
Could I speak to you, Dr. Carvas?
What do you want, Wacky?
I thought, sir, since you won't let me fly one of the bombers, you might appoint me as mechanic to the new flight commander.
The new flight commander hasn't arrived yet. I'll consider it when he does, Wacky.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Say, who's the screwball?
Wacky.
Not Sandy.
Wacky was one of my best pirates. Cracked up delivering a bomber. I'm afraid to trust him with the plane now. Probably mistook you for the new flight commander Slade was sending up. Dr. Carvas speaking. Yeah, very well. I wanted at the Western Hangar. We'll stop there and then look over your van, High Pitch.
Now, listen. We've stopped inside of some sort of rock cavern.
Do you suppose there's any way out, Mandrake?
I doubt it.
Lothar doubt it.
I don't think so either.
High Pitch has evidently gone to report to whoever's in charge here.
And he'll be coming back to get Miss Nada as soon as he reports.
Yes. Now, if there's no one else in this cavern when High Pitch returns, Lothar and I might surprise him when he opens the van doors and overpower him.
Might do.
Then what, Mandrake?
We could make a dash for the tunnel in this van.
But the guards at the tunnel would stop us.
You forget we have the password, Nada. But if we're caught...
It's the end for all of us, isn't it, Mandrake?
I'm afraid so. Tommy?
Yes, Mr. Mandrake?
I'm going to hide you in the rumble seat of the coupe.
Oh, gosh, I want to help, not hide.
But, Tommy, if we're caught and you're in the rumble seat, you might be saved.
Oh, but just to hide while you and Lothar and Miss Nodder are...
Our three lives aren't important, Tommy. Not against the thousands of lives that might be lost.
Listen. Lothar hears something.
You've got jungle ears, Lothar. Yes. Somebody's trying keys in the van door padlock. Quick, Tommy. Huh? In the rumble seat.
Oh, all right.
Back behind the coupe, Nada. Stay out of sight.
All right, Mandrake.
All right in there, Tommy?
I'm all right, sir.
Now, don't make a move in there until Lothar or I come back for you.
Right.
If we're caught, you're on your own, Tommy. Use your head like you've always done before.
Yes, sir. I'll try.
Good boy. Whoever out there got locked open. Take Bar out now.
You take that side. I'll take this. Flatten out in the shadows as much as possible. Wait for my signal to move.
Yes, Master.
Dark in there. A girl, high pitch said. Pretty girl. Maybe was having fun with Wacky. Everybody has fun with Wacky. Maybe there's a flashlight under the seat. Might be a dead girl in there. Yes. I'll try to find the flashlight.
Lothar.
Yes, Master.
Get Nada quickly while I drop off the rear of the truck.
I'm right here, Mandrake. I heard what that man said.
All right. All right, Lothar. Hand Nada down to me.
Yes, Master.
I've got her. Drop down yourself now, Lothar.
Yes, Master.
All right. Slip around the side here between the van and the wall.
When fellow come back with light, me fix...
No. Much better if we remain undiscovered. It's a break that there are no lights on in here. Quiet now.
There is a black coupe in there. High Pitch didn't lie about that. Maybe the girl is in the coupe. Take me a minute to find out. You lied about that.
He's climbed into the van.
I hope he doesn't discover Tommy in the rumble seat.
Him, crazy fella, hitch ride on van before we come to Mountain Tunnel Master. Call himself Wacky.
Yes. I can't understand how a lunatic is allowed to run wild in here. Something strange about this.
I'm glad I'm not in there, Mandrake. I don't think I'd like to be found by that dead madman.
He may decide to lock the van when he doesn't find you in there, Nada. If he does, I'm going to try a trick. Oh, quiet now.
There's no sign of a girl in here. All my trouble for nothing. A high pitch won't know I let him fool me. Now, Wacky's too smart. High Pitch will find this precious van locked. Yeah, locked just the way we left it. I'll show them I'm not such a fool as they think. I'll show...
Don't snap that padlock, Wacky.
Who's that?
Never mind. What are you doing fooling around this van?
Nothing. Nothing wrong. I was just looking inside. I meant no harm.
Give me that flashlight.
Here it is.
Now... A password, Wacky?
There's a great plan. The great plan. You see, I know it.
What is the great plan, Wacky?
Destruction, death, devastation everywhere. That's the great plan. But you didn't give me the answering password. What are you doing here? Maybe you're a spy. You a spy?
The answering password, Wacky, is the day is near.
Oh, that's right. The day is near. You know all right.
You sound disappointed.
I hoped you might be a spy.
Why did you hope that?
Would be a great feather in Wacky's cap. His dunce cap if Wacky caught a spy.
Ah, but you didn't catch me, Wacky. I caught you.
You won't report me because I looked in the van.
That depends on how you answer my questions. That day is near. How near, Wacky?
Oh, very near, very near. We have been not told the exact day, but I know it is very near.
How do you know that, Wacky?
Because every day I test engines. I keep them purring like great cats. And this morning, maybe you don't know what happened this morning.
No, what happened this morning, Wacky?
The bomb racks were filled.
So? The bomb racks were filled this morning.
Yes, yes. I can't place your voice in the dark. Are you the new flight commander that Slade sent up?
Yes, that's right. I'm the new commander.
Then Wacky was right. The day is very near.
Very near.
Have you asked Dr. Kavass to assign you a mechanic?
No, not yet. I haven't reported to Dr. Kavass yet.
Ask him for Wacky.
Why?
Well, no one knows those engines like Wacky. Wacky used to assemble them. No one knows those giant Cyclone 4 bombers like Wacky. I used to fly them.
Fly them?
I was a test pilot for Cyclone, but I cracked up. And throw your flashlight on my face. See?
I see.
I thought you'd turn the light off after one look at my face. Dr. Kavass fixed me up. He won't let me fly anymore. But I'd like to be your mechanic.
I'll try to arrange it.
But you won't tell them, high pitcher Dr. Kavass, that I looked in the van.
I won't say a word.
Throw that flashlight on your face. I'd like to see what you look like.
All right, Wacky. There you are. Take a good long look so you will remember me. You and I are going to be friends, Wacky. Now we've seen one another's faces, and we know we can trust one another. What do you say? Wacky.
Oh, him slip away on you, master, in the dark.
He's cunning. Like all madmen. I don't know whether I've made an ally in the enemy camp, Lothar. I've been played for a fool by that. Where's Nada?
Right here, Mandrake. I've been almost afraid to breathe.
I have a plan. I might be able to bluff it through.
What is it, Mandrake?
This Dr. Kavass has never seen me.
High pitch has, though. Mandrake, you're not thinking of...
High pitch saw the back of my head once through a window.
Mandrake, please.
Besides, you heard what Wacky said. The bomb racks are filled. They're getting ready to deliver a crippling blow that this country might not recover from.
The new flight commander will report to Dr. Kavass at once. The new flight commander will report to Dr. Kavass at once.
Nada, Wacky must have reported. It's too late to run now. I'm afraid I shall have to report to Dr. Kavass at once.
Return to life.
Listen to the weird circle.
History of the House of Usher. I'm leaving it as my last will and testament, because before this year is over, the cavernous tarn will close over the gables of our decadent home. It was written by our ancestors many years ago that when the rains are blood red, the House of Usher will crumble to the earth. There are three members of the Usher family living. Two in direct descent, the Lady Madeline and her twin brother Roderick. I was engaged to marry Roderick long before I knew my cousin. It is a custom for the Usher family to intermarry. The Lady Madeline has been confined to bed these many weeks, waiting for death, waiting for the last days of her life to pass quietly.
I have so little time left, Roderick. I must see Charles before I die.
Charles Wilson is tied up in London on business.
He can't come down here every time you've a whim to see him.
Oh, this is no whim. It's just a matter of days before I... Don't be impatient with me.
Sister, please.
Oh, afraid of the truth, Roderick? You've always been afraid of me. I can read your mind so easily. Look at me, brother.
Let's not argue again.
You've always wanted me to die. You've waited for it year after year, praying and hoping that I die, leaving you free to inherit the house and the fortune. But you'll be fooled. Look. Look at the rain.
This isn't you speaking, it's the fever.
Fever or not, the rain is turning red, isn't it?
Yes, it seems that way at times.
Each day it will be redder and redder and darker and...
Madeline.
Afraid, brother? Are you afraid of blood-red rains?
The doctor said you should have rest and quiet. You weaken yourself when you're excited.
Where's Dina?
I don't know. I'm not her keeper. She's downstairs, probably, buried in that romantic nonsense that she reads.
Every girl likes to read romantic stories, Rod. Heaven help her when she becomes your wife. Call her for me, will you?
The doctor's orders were that you're not to be disturbed.
Call her, Rod. Do as I say.
For your own good,
I'll get even with you someday. Dina. Dina. Dina.
Madeline.
Dina.
Did you call me Lady Madeline?
Yes, Dina Chara. Come here, my dear.
Is there something I can do for you?
Yes. I want to see Charles Wilson before I die.
I told you he was busy, Maddie.
Tell Talbot to hitch up the coach and four, Dina. Go to London tonight. Tell Charles... I must see him right away. Bring him back with you.
I'll not have Dina go out in this weather.
But, Roderick...
Dina, please go. Don't listen to Rod. Do this for me.
I will not have strangers dragged into our family secrets.
Charles Wilson is no stranger. He's the only one who knows the secret of the House of Usher.
I don't like leaving you, cousin.
The doctor will be here shortly. Hurry, my dear, and bring Charles back.
I forbid it, Dina.
If I don't see Charles tonight, I'll be buried alive. Not able to live. Not able to die.
Whoa. We'll never get through to London tonight, Mum. Not in this weather. Not in a million years. It ain't a night for humans to be a bat.
The Lady Madeline is dying. The least we can do is grant her her last wish.
Dina!
Quickly, Talbot, before Lord Rick tries to catch up with us.
Dina, did you hear me call you?
Yes, I heard you, cousin.
I'm trying to protect you, child, because I love you. Don't want any harm to come to my future wife.
Please, Rod.
Why do you turn from me when I touch you?
I don't know.
Afraid of me?
I...
Answer me, Dina. Are you afraid of me?
Yes.
But you loved me once.
That was before we returned to the House of Usher.
And you're going anyway?
Yes, Roderick. For Madeline's sake.
Are you ready, Mum?
Yes. Yes, Talbot, ready. We'll be back by midnight, Roderick.
Hurry, cousin. Or else the Lady Madeline might not live long enough to get her last wish.
Did she leave, Roderick?
Yes. Madeline, why don't you confide in me? Why must you call in strangers when you know how it humiliates me?
I can't trust you, Roderick.
Ever since we were children, you've kept one secret from me. What is that secret, Madeline?
That's one thing you'll never wheedle out of me.
What is that secret, Maddie?
Leave me alone, brother. I'm ill.
You're dying, Madeline. You know you're dying. The secret won't do you any good. Now, what is it?
Please, Roderick.
Tell me, Madeline, or you won't live to die the way you think you will. Tell me, or by heaven, I'll force it out of you.
Oh, go there. Whoa, boy. This is his house, Mum.
Thank you, Talbot. Wilson, is he here?
Yes, I... Why, Dina Usher, what are you doing in London at this hour of the night? Come in, my dear.
The Lady Madeline sent me.
Great heavens, child, your clothes are drenched. Come on in.
I'll fix you some hot tea.
Oh, we haven't time, Charles. Madeline wants to see you at once. Please come with me right away. The doctor doesn't think she'll live through the night.
Madeline? Dying?
Oh, she's been ill for months. Charles, you wouldn't know her anymore.
Why didn't you let me know before this?
Roderick wouldn't let me.
Roderick? But why?
I can't explain now, Charles. Believe me when I say it's important that you come at once. Talbot's waiting outside. I'm frightened for Madeline. We've got to be back by midnight.
You came in time, Doctor.
Lady Usher, you shouldn't allow your brother to excite you.
There's a cruel streak in him at times. Surprisingly like my grandfather. What time is it?
Midnight. Here, drink this. It will give you strength.
I can't move.
Lean against me. There.
Dr. Bain, you've attended all my family, haven't you?
Yes, Lady Usher.
You've been closer to us than almost anyone. If I ask you for an honest answer, will you give it to me?
That depends on the question.
How much longer have I to live?
Years, my dear.
No, Doctor. I want an honest answer. Please. It's imperative that I know.
I don't know, really, my dear.
As fast as the horses can go, Mum.
Yes.
Faster, Talbot.
We won't accomplish anything at all if you lose self-control, Dina.
Oh, I'm sorry, Charles, but I've the most dreadful foreboding.
Foreboding? I thought Madeline and Roderick were as close as brother and sister could possibly be.
They were until about a year ago.
What caused the change?
Well, I've been living at the house of Usher for about 4 months when Roderick suddenly became, well, nervous, jumpy. He'd lock himself up in his room for days. He was morbid, frightfully morbid.
Sounds like a depression of spirit.
Oh, it went deeper than that. Madeline fell ill at the same time. And then the horrible reddish rains began to fall.
Red rain? Dina, really?
Oh, you'll see. The first day those rains began to fall, the rift between Madden and Roderick widened. Until now, their hate is a living thing. It fills the house. They seem to be battling constantly for possession of each other's soul. Charles, look. Look ahead. There's the house. And the rain. Look at the rain.
Yes. Red rain.
Well, Charles, do come in. We've been waiting for you.
Oh, it's good to see you again, Roderick.
Come in, Dina. Don't stand there staring at me.
It's been a long time since I've last seen you, Rod.
Yes, a long time.
Let me take your coat, Charles. I'll hang it up.
Thank you, dear.
My sister's waiting, Charles. You'd better go right up.
Yes, of course.
I'd better warn you. Madeline's delirious. She doesn't quite know what she's saying sometimes.
Why don't you come up with me?
She expressed a desire to see you alone.
Charles. Oh, Charles, I'm so glad you came. I had to see you alone.
Madeline, don't try to sit up. You'll only weaken yourself.
Sit over here, Charles, next to me. You're the only person I can trust, and you must promise to do exactly as I say.
Of course, of course.
Oh, remember what I told you years ago. Remember about Roderick and me. I told you then that he and I were more than twins.
Well, that was just childish fancy.
Oh, I wish to God it were. But those suspicions have all been proven these last few months. Roderick and I are only one person. Not two. We have two earthly bodies. But we share one soul. When Charles and I were born, our shoulders were attached. The day of our birth, we were separated.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean you share one soul.
I've never been able to feel anything for myself. His thoughts are my thoughts. His tears are my tears. His weaknesses are mine. Don't you understand, Charles?
Are you sure of this, Madeline?
Positive. His mind has the initiative. He doesn't respond to my emotions. Because I have none. None. I'm cold without him. Won't you see, my earthly body is wasting away. But my soul is not my own. As long as he's alive, Charles, the power of his life will keep me living.
Madeline, Lady Madeline, you mustn't even think of it.
Oh, it's true, though. I'll have a living death. I'll be buried alive. Unable to live. Unable to die.
Madeline.
That's why I called you here. Promise me now, Charles. You'll never allow my coffin to be sealed. Keep my body in this house.
You must rest, Madeline. Stop talking.
Do you promise, Charles? Promise.
Yes, yes, of course I do.
Don't tell Roderick, Charles. Ever. He'll seal me in my tomb alive.
Madeline, my dear.
Every mortal is entitled to his own soul. If I can't rest in death. If I can't rest in death, I'll return from the grave and take him with me.
Promise is my word.
What are you doing standing outside this door, Roderick?
Tina.
Not enough to see Charles in privacy. Why do you insist on spying on your own sister?
Shut up.
I can't understand you, Roderick.
There are many things you can't understand, Tina. Come with me downstairs.
Let me go.
Come along. It's the living room.
I'd like to go in and tell Madeline that you were spying on her again.
Tell her if you wish. She's a poor, sick thing. Unable to lift her arm against me.
I don't know how I ever loved you.
You'll learn to again after we're married.
I hate you, Roderick Usher. I'll never marry you.
In heaven's name!
Roderick! Roderick, what's the matter?
Pain inside me, crawling like vermin. Help me, Dina.
Oh, of course.
Help me.
Roderick! Dina! It's Madeline! She's dead!
I am, Madeline, beside your bed. You're dead, Madeline. Dead. Two people fought for the possession of one soul, and you've lost. You'll try to drag me to the grave with you, but you're weaker than I, Madeline. You'll never return. Never.
That was your last request, Doctor.
It's a peculiar request, Mr. Wilson.
I know it is, Doctor, but it was the Lady Madeline's last wish. Oh, Roderick. What are you doing here?
Taking a last look at my beloved sister's face.
Oh. Doctor, I'm not quite sure that the Lady Madeline is dead. Look at the flush of life in her cheeks.
Stop speaking like a fool, Charles.
Look for yourself, Roderick.
What are you trying to do, frighten me?
No. I've asked the doctor to verify her death.
In cases of this kind, Mr. Wilson, death from catalepsy, the deceased often retains a lifelike flush. But it's merely symptomatic. Nothing supernatural about it.
Of course she's dead. Isn't she, Doctor?
However, if you feel the slightest doubt...
No doubt at all.
I'd suggest delaying the burial for a week or two.
As her nearest of kin, I want the funeral held at once. She'll be laid to rest in the family catacombs beneath the house.
Roderick, I gave her my word.
Your word isn't valid. You're not one of the family.
But it was my word of honor.
Don't mix in family affairs, Charles.
But the least you can do is grant her last wish, Roderick.
This is nonsense. The dead are best buried.
But, Rod, your own sister...
No.
As the doctor in the case, I don't feel justified in making out a death certificate for 2 weeks. The Lady Madeline will lie in state in her coffin in the catacombs. The coffin will remain open.
For 30 years, these catacombs have been unused. Look at the walls, Tina. Time has encrusted them with nitre.
It's cold in here. Cold and damp.
Let's take the coffin this way, Talbot. Watch out, Charles. Don't fall. Be careful. Catacombs have always been soft with slime and nitre. Hard to breathe in here at times, isn't it?
Where's the room, Roderick?
Ahead. The end of the corridor.
Are you positive we can keep a fire burning in there?
Yes, Charles. Talbot.
Yes, sir.
Did you start the fire?
Oh, yes, sir. I did that early this morning. The room ought to be warm by now, sir.
Talbot's a dependable man. He starts warm fires to bring life to death.
Roderick, how can you act like that? Your own sister.
Yes, my own dear, beloved sister.
Hey, Charles. Look ahead of you. Tiny room at the end of a corridor. The fire is blazing.
Careful. Careful with the casket.
We'll place it on the table.
Center. Oh. All right, sir. We can place it down.
Yes.
Yes, Top. Down there.
I know the fire people of the...
Rest in peace.
And that we shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though this body be destroyed, yet shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not as a stranger. We brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. The Lord giveth, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Yes, ma'am?
Why, Mum, what are you doing up at this hour of the night?
I can't sleep. I keep dreaming that Lady Madeline is crying for help. Where's Lord Roderick?
Oh, he couldn't sleep either, Mum. He said he was worried that his sister was cold, Mum. Whatever does he mean by that?
Did he go down to the catacombs?
Yes, Mum, that he did. He said he wanted to stir the fires a bit.
Down there?
Wait a minute, Mum.
Later, Talbot. I must stop him. I must.
I wouldn't go down there, Mum. It's ever so cold and I'm damp. I wouldn't go down there myself. I advised Lord Roderick against it, Mum. I did. I
Roderick! 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 The door. The door slammed shut. It's so dark in here. Cold and dark. Roderick! Roderick! Roderick, where are you? Rod, answer me!
I don't like these goings-on at all, I don't. People dying and not getting themselves properly buried. It ain't normal. No, that it ain't.
Talbot.
What? Are you up too, Mr. Wilson? Don't nobody sleep proper in this here house?
Where are Miss Dina and Lord Roderick Talbot?
Well, I was sitting here as nice as you please, sir.
But where is Miss Dina Talbot?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm getting to. I was drinking this here cup of tea when Lord Roderick comes in a little past midnight. Or was it a little before midnight?
Where is he?
Well, I'm getting to that. He comes in and he says he does... He wants a flame.
Yes?
Yeah. He says, as calm as you please, he wants to go down and keep his sister from getting cold.
And Miss Dina?
Well, as for her, she came down a little later and said she dreamt that the Lady Madeline was calling to her. So she follows Lord Roderick to the catacombs. It ain't proper, sir. It ain't proper.
Calling me, cousin.
Oh, Roderick, I was so frightened. I thought I was lost.
Why did you come down here?
I dreamt Madeline needed me. Well, what did you do, Rod?
Be quiet, Dina.
You closed the coffin. Oh, how could you?
Don't you approve?
You were going to drive a stake through her coffin.
She was a witch, Dina. A witch. Isn't that the custom to drive a stake through the heart of a witch? Watch, Dina. Watch.
No.
Watch me drive the hammer through her heart.
Stop, Rod. Stop. Stop that.
What?
Roderick, put that stake down in heaven's name. Don't. Don't. Leave it alone.
Take your hands off.
Oh, please, Roderick. Please. It's so horrible. Don't you understand? It's your own sister. Your own sister.
I'll pay for this, Dina. You and Madeline together.
Oh, Roderick.
Dina. Help me with this.
Yes, sir. Pardon me, Lord Roderick. But, sir.
Oh, Charles, darling, you came just in time.
He looks like he was dead, sir, lying there on the sofa.
No, no, he's beginning to stir.
Keep bathing his face in cool water, dear. He'll be all right. I'm afraid the shock of Madeline's death is too much for him.
The shock of her death, the constant fall of the rain. It's getting redder all the time, Charles.
Yes, it is. That's just an electric phenomenon.
Oh. Don't try to move, Roderick.
Oh. It's you, Dina. You again.
Lie still, cousin.
You'll feel better in a little while.
You're both fools. You shouldn't have stopped me. She's a witch. Don't you understand?
No, no, Roderick.
Listen. Listen, Charles.
What?
Can't you hear it?
What are you talking about?
Listen. I told you once my hearing was super acute. I can hear a heart beating.
You're overwrought. Suppose I go for the doctor, Rod. He'll give you a sedative.
No. No, don't leave me.
But you need your sleep.
Of course you do. All this horror tonight will pass over when the morning comes. And those infernal rains clear.
It's not in my mind. She's coming. She's coming for me. I can hear her in the catacombs. Listen, Charles, listen.
Roderick, please believe me that you're simply overwrought and emotional.
I've got to get out of here. I must leave at once. She's coming for me. Coming. She swore she would. I know she did. I overheard. I overheard her talk with you, Charles.
Roderick.
Cousin, no, you're hearing things.
Now, listen.
I can't hear anything.
She's leaving the catacombs now. Listen, Charles, don't you hear her breathing? Can't you hear her footsteps? Her sighs? She's in the hallway, Charles. In the hall. Help me, Charles. Help me, Charles.
Roderick.
She's coming closer. Faster. Faster. Her feet are on the stairs. One by one, she's coming up those stairs. Listen, you can hear her now, can't you? You can hear her now.
Charles, look out the window. The rain, the blood red.
She's outside the door. Listen. Listen, cousin, listen.
Madeline!
No, sister. No.
Leave the house of Usher, Charles. You and Dina, leave this cursed house at once. The rains are blood red. And I've come to reclaim my soul.
Adeline. No.
And you, Roderick, you will be soulless forever.
From that chamber and from that mansion, Charles and I fled aghast. The storm was still abroad in all its wrath as we crossed the park to the highway. The moon above the house of Usher was blood red. And Charles held me close as we walked on and on into the night.
Dina, my darling, don't look back. The house is crumbled to the ground. Crumbled into the cavernous tide.
Charles.
Little Dina. You'll always be safe with me.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have recalled the fall of the House of Usher. Bell keeper, toll the bell.
Thank you again for listening, and please don't forget to follow, review, rate, and share.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.